Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
This episode is brought to you by my friends at Broccolite. Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is the art of being well. What's up, and welcome to the art of being well. I am a leading functional medicine expert. I get to consult people around the world via webcam, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I wrote Intuitive Fasting, The Inflammation Spectrum, Ketotarian, and my brand new book is for pre-order right now. It's called Gut Feelings. You can check all the information you need to know about the books, the telehealth center, becoming a patient. There's lots of free resources there for you as well, all at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners of The Art of Being Well, we are giving away free signed books of your choice if you head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well there. Tell us what you love about the show. And every month, no matter when you listen to this episode, my team and I will be randomly picking winners every month. And I'll reach out to you and we'll ask what book you want. I'll sign it. We'll send it out to you wherever you're at in the world. So you can do it two different ways. You can leave your Instagram handle in the Apple Podcast review itself, or you can message me on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole and send me a screenshot of your Apple Podcast review. Either way is completely fine. Every month, my team and I will be going through my messages on Instagram as well as the Apple Podcast review, and we'll reach out to you. All right, let's get to today's guest. We have two guests today, David Roberts and John Gilday. David Roberts holds an MPH from Johns Hopkins University, a master's in BME from UVA, and a bachelor's in EE and BME from Duke. David has more than 20 years of public health experience on three continents. In 2014, David co-founded the gut supplement Restore, now known as ION. He's just a wealth of information. Joining David is John Gilday. John is a Johns Hopkins trained PhD with 60 scientific publications from over 20 NIH-funded studies. He is an expert in cell culture and exosomes, performing all the science behind gut supplement Restore, now known as ION. John was instrumental in the initial stabilization of something called sulforaphane, which you're going to learn all about today. I had to say, since the inception of the podcast, I've learned something from all of my guests, but this episode is going to blow your mind in the best of ways. It is fascinating. All right, let's get right to it. This is David Roberts and John Gilday's Art of Being Well. David and John, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're excited.
People are going to be blown away. We're going to change their life one science fact at a time in this conversation. I don't think they're ready for this, but they better get ready. They better buckle up. So let's kind of set the stage with we're going to talk about sulforaphane, ways to support longevity, metabolism, detox pathway, so many different things. But how did you get in this aspect of science, the research around sulforaphane specifically.
Yeah. So my wife, Mara, was diagnosed with cancer back in 2012, breast cancer. And so she wanted to treat it integratively, both with some conventional, but a lot of alternative and natural treatments. And so I have a background in the sciences, started reading different things and saw about sulforaphane. And then actually we ended up growing her, we got a culture of her, or a tumor, bit of her tumor, and grew her cancer in our lab. John did, and we were able to put 60 different supplements on them to see what killed her specific type of cancer. And so sulforaphane, this good molecule from broccoli, was number three in killing her type of cancer. So I went out to buy it, ended up buying some run-of-the-mill broccoli supplements, and then realized that actually, even though it says it's sulforaphane glucosinolate, that doesn't mean that it's sulforaphane in the capsule, because it really wasn't seeing, we weren't seeing the benefits. If you read about it in the literature, it's just amazing. And so we were kind of doing that for a few months, and there's like, we're not really seeing anything. And then come to find out, she wasn't taking sulforaphane. She was taking the molecule that comes before sulforaphane. So at that point, we realized sulforaphane wasn't stable, and that's why it's not in the capsules. So we ended up growing like broccoli sprouts for like 10 families. And so we juice them every day, and we're getting the sulforaphane that way. And a couple years later, John, who was helping us out and giving us lots of good advice and suggestions from the science standpoint, was like, I think I stabilize sulforaphane. And we were like, what? And so we ended up testing it at a third party. And sure enough, he had stabilized it. And so we were both with another supplement company at the time, Ion. And so we ended up, we're just not going to do anything with it. But Mara ended up raising the seed money to put it, to bring it to market. And unfortunately, she ended up getting sick and dying. And then we ended up bringing it to market a few months later to kind of in her honor, but also realizing her vision of people need this molecule and it's not out there. And so a lot of what we do is educate people, like a lot of the supplements out there. In fact, all but two don't have sulforaphane in the capsule.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And I'm so sorry for your loss as well. I mean, it's to go through that. And but like you said, it's in her honor. And so many people don't know about this. They're going to know so much more and out of this conversation. So it's her legacy lives on. And I have to say, and as a clinician who is a voracious reader of research, and all these years I've been saying it's sulforaphane, the first thing I learned today is, no, the academic science guys say it's sulforaphane. So I'm going to start saying it the correct way from now on.
But, I may be saying it wrong. Did I say it wrong?
Yeah. Maybe it's tomato, tomato. I mean, it's like, who cares? We know what it means. Yeah. We know what we mean. Let's not be too elitist here. We could be like the regular people. Let's define it first. I mean, now they just heard, whoa, what the heck? What can it do to cancer cells? What is sulforaphane? What is this compound?
So yeah, it was basically the molecule is from broccoli, and it's derived from broccoli. So you have a head of broccoli, start chewing it, and it breaks the cell wall, which has an enzyme called myrosinase, and it takes the precursor to sulforaphane called glucuraphanin, and together they make sulforaphane. And so the molecule was discovered in 1992 up at Johns Hopkins. And since then, there have been over 2,000 research papers on the molecule. But there's actually a whole center at Hopkins called the Chemoprotective Institute that what they have done historically, and I don't think they do it now, but they grow broccoli sprouts because, they were unable to stabilize it. So they create these broccoli sprout beverages for the researchers. So you'll see most of the research papers out there have used their sprouts. So they drink a broccoli sprout beverage that they've measured for sulforaphane content. But, you know, the benefits, I mean, that we typically highlight, there are a lot of benefits, but brain health, we talk about detox, so it works in all three phases. It's the best phase two detoxifier, inflammation, antioxidant response system, and then also anti-aging. So those are some of the things that
Yeah. Really. And we're going to get very granular on all of those things of how it exactly works and the mechanisms involved. I'm curious, before we move on, you mentioned it being one of three different compounds that were the most effective for these cancer cells. I'm curious, what were the other two? Do you guys remember?
I remember. Do you remember,
John?
I think one of them was curcumin.
Curcumin and vitamin C, the IV form. Yeah.
Got it. So IV, vitamin C, curcumin, and sulforaphane. So let's talk about the stabilization, John. Why is that so important? How does somebody know if they're like reading a label on a supplement form, if it's stabilized or not? And when you're getting in food form, how much of it's bioavailable? How much of it's stabilized in eating broccoli sprouts, for example?
Yes, so the standard for sure out there is to eat the broccoli sprouts. In the case of the production that they do for research, is they make a liquid version of it, and then they test for sulforaphane in it, and then they deep freeze it. And so they have it stabilized by putting it in a minus 80 freezer, which most people don't have access to. And so those products that they gave out to do the research is what is used out there. But in the case of trying to make it stable, the only way to really test it is to, like what we did was make it and then store it at different temperatures and then over time sample it. And so we have subsequently showed that, you know, at first it was, we knew it was stable, but not how stable. We've gone out multiple years now, and so we know that it's very stable. So the critical pieces there are, you know, keeping it dry, but that's probably as far as they want me to talk about the actual mechanism of stability. So if you open the bottle and then close it and then store it, we've done that out to a year and it's stable out to a year.
And if you go on Amazon, you'll see there are products that say stabilized sulforaphane in the titles, things like that. Then you look at the back of the label and it says sulforaphane glucosinolate or glucoraphanin. And glucoraphanin, most of the other supplements have that because it's stable.
Yeah, got it.
But it doesn't give you benefits.
Got it. So let's kind of really dial in into longevity, health span, anti-aging. A lot of the listeners really want to know different ways they can optimize it. They want to know the latest science on this space of health span and longevity. And I know one of the avenues in which this research is exploring sulforaphane, tomato, tomato, what it can do is one of the mechanisms is autophagy. And most of the listeners know what autophagy is, but if you could touch on it for maybe people that are newer to the conversation and how sulforaphane can really, what's sulforaphane's role in the induction of autophagy?
The good framework for that is that my background is genetics, so embedded in any genome is a large number of slight mutations called SNPs. And so those are often just small changes in amino acids and proteins that you don't normally see the phenotype from. But as you age and as you damage these proteins, they tend to want to not fold properly. So the actual activity of proteins or the function of those proteins get damaged over time. And so one of the ways that you turn over proteins is proteostasis. So it's how you get rid of proteins that are underfunctioning. And so the way your body does that is by autophagy. So if you have an accumulation of misfolded proteins by, you know, stress or mutation or SNPs or, you know, any of the ways that you know how you damage proteins, they'll accumulate and that cell then starts functioning suboptimally. And so autophagy is the protein component of that. Mitophagy is the mitochondrial component of that. And there's specific signaling that goes on to turn that on and get rid of the misfolded proteins. And so that's why, especially as we age, it would be very good to stimulate autophagy to kind of clear out those misfolded proteins.
Got it. So sulforaphane, it would be accurate to say then it's increasing the body's ability to support autophagy pathways, correct?
Yep.
Got it. So what does that mean on a practical level? It is by supporting the way that I think of autophagy, if you break that word down, autophagy, self-eating, it's all our good cells gobbling up all the dysfunctional cells. I know that's very elementary and reductive, but is that a good description for the layperson out there?
Yeah, I think it is. I think in the case that you're talking about is dead cells being cleared. So a lot of that kind of moves into a different topic, which is senolysis. So getting rid of senescent cells.
Yes.
Also an extremely good inducer of senescence. But the autophagy, at least in my mind, is happening within a single cell. So it's the mechanism within a cell that is consuming the misfolded proteins.
Got it. So is there a correlation between autophagy pathways and sort of the senolytic activity, or can one happen without the other? Are they part of the larger goal here?
Yeah, they are related for sure. I mean, a good example of it, just because we were talking about cancer earlier, is that if you go through a treatment and you are treated with the classic chemotherapy, radiation therapy, it's now known that there you have from then on a much higher number of senescent cells in your body. And so those senescent cells are ones that do not proliferate anymore. So they're kind of stuck in this stasis where it's not proliferating anymore. So it's not rebuilding the tissue. And then those cells also tend to have a secretory phenotype where they're secreting cytokines. So that's a really important component of aging right now, is that these inflammatory molecules, when you have senescent cells, is creating this inflammatory state that's it's very hard to reverse unless you can stimulate the clearing of those cells and decrease that inflammatory mechanism.
Got it. And another interesting pathway that's being explored in the research with sulforaphane is histone deacetylase inhibition. So that specifically could be really beneficial for cancer, right? I mean, and maybe can we explain that? Because autophagy, I feel, is a little bit more sexy in the wellness space, but histone deacetylase inhibition is newer. Maybe many people don't know about it. Can you explain that?
Do you want to do a high view of
break,
that?
Break it down for us, David. Come on.
It's kind of
The goal of this right now is to make histone deacetylase inhibition as sexy as autophagy right now for all the biohackers out there.
I'll jump in and then I'll make it sexy.
So I'll just say kind of how I understand it. So histone acetylation is a feature of how DNA is wrapped up into generally open states of transcription or closed states of transcription. So it's kind of one of the mechanisms that epigenetics happens. Is I actually did my PhD on this, so if I go too granular, slow me down.
No, but get as granular as you want to get. That's great.
So as you're developing, you have regions of your chromosomes that are open that allow transcription factors to go in there and turn on genes. And those are called euchromatins. So they're open configuration. And then there's a whole set of genes that do that during development. And then an opposing set of genes that are to close off sections of your genome and make them inaccessible. So those are the two states, heterochromatin and euchromatin. So it's open and closed states. And then as you're aging, what's happening is that every time you get a DNA strand break, the mechanisms that allow you to remember the on and off state of your genes gets distracted. So a component of those chromatin regulating genes get distracted to go fix that DNA strand break before you go on and continue developing. And so it makes you forget your state of on and off genes. And so that's done through histone deacetylation, acetylation, and it's one of the layers of it. And so in general, they're packaged tight in one situation. Histone deacetylase will allow access to genes so that you can regulate genes within. So we're talking about large numbers of genes and the slow process of development and the slow process of aging, you can access those mechanisms.
Got it. David, any thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I think just that, I mean, that's very specific, but I think as we're talking about different things within aging, and John says this all the time, it's a lot of the larger picture is, I think everything we've talked about is driven by inflammation. Senescence, like he was talking about with radiation and chemotherapy, and just all, you know, the autophagy, the need to induce autophagy, those cells probably went down because of inflammation. And so, you know, that's the beauty of sulforaphane is, you know, one of the main steps is it helps with inflammation, and it mm-hmm. does these other things too. So it's like it's coming at anti-aging mm-hmm. from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, absolutely. And another one, a part of that, like you said, the senescence and the autophagy and these other pathways, these longevity pathways, one of them is the antioxidant response system and how it really induces over 200 different genes. Like you said, we can narrow down on like the really interesting ones that we understanding the pathway or someone, you know, just doing their thesis on this pathway, but it's doing lots of different things for our body that we're probably just only beginning to understand. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we both do. But one of the most exciting things about, if you think about, like we were talking about vitamin C. If you yeah. think of vitamin C, you know, it's an antioxidant. One vitamin C molecule can cancel out one prooxidant. Sulforaphane is almost like a master antioxidant in the sense that it induces what you said, the antioxidant response system, which are genes that then start pumping out over 200 different types of antioxidants. And what's more is that it turns it on for one dose, turns it on for 72 hours. And so it just keeps going and going, and going. I was camping with my son in Colorado this past summer. And for some reason, this is the first time it's happened, but I brought some broccoli because we were doing long hikes, and I was like, "I definitely am going to need it for these old bones." But it oxidized, and so actually, it was moist, and it happened to be moist there at that time, rainy, and it was no good. And so, a day went by, 2 days went by, 3 days went by, and then by the fourth day, I was definitely noticing, like, "Okay, I'm definitely feeling it," and that's the, you know, the at that time, you know, the antioxidant response system and that induction had worn off.
Mm. Fascinating. And I'm aware of the research around sulforaphane's ability to modulate our microbiome's age, which I find fascinating, which I don't think a lot of people know about. But what's the connection there? How do we find out how old our microbiome is and really support not our own health span, but the health span of our microbiome, which is intimately connected to our own?
Yeah, I think the connection to microbiome is really interesting. Probably an audience like yours that's up on the research will know that a lot of the brain-related issues that people are having right now, it's turning out each one of them is starting in the gut. And so the inflammation and the microbiome and how it's functioning or dysfunctioning is being transmitted backwards up through your neurons back into your brain. So that's actually the mechanism is through misfolded proteins. So the way that the kind of seminal study on sulforaphane for the microbiome was that you just measure what is the microbiome of a young person and what is the microbiome of an old person. And then to take sulforaphane and then look at the change in the short term. And it was very clear that a large number of the microbiome was switching back towards a younger profile. And that's important because it's really hard to go in there with a single bacteria and figure out pathways. Yes. But there are ways to show general features of it as being pro-inflammatory, anti-inflammatory, things like that. But in this case, it was just looked younger. And so the aspects of which bacteria go up and down is kind of in the minutia, but the overall idea that the microbiome is more useful was very striking. And I think a lot of people didn't realize that sulforaphane had that activity until that paper. But it's pretty easy to see how it could act in that area because we've shown sulforaphane drops your blood sugar levels quick. It'll make you go into ketosis more quickly. So you get into secreting butyrate, you know, as your blood sugars lower over time. And of course, your microbiome interface with both sugar and butyrate is a kind of very central feature of how your microbiome functions or how you can tell whether it's functioning well.
In fact, one of the papers that may be the one that you were talking about, they actually did find that, as John was saying, you know, if they had a control of older, I think this paper I'm thinking about was mice that didn't have sulforaphane, old mice that did, younger mice that didn't, younger mice that did have sulforaphane. And the young, both sets of the young mice and the old mice that had sulforaphane had a bacteria that actually is known to produce fatty acids, which would be important for the, or short chain fatty acids, which would be important for the butyrate production.
Butyrate, yeah. Yeah, and isn't that fascinating? I mean, kind of touching on what you both are saying is that as time goes on and we understand these underlying mechanisms of how such and such molecule, how can such and such compound impact, how does it, we know it's beneficial, but how? Well, it turns out so much of it, the causal underlying mechanism is that how it's modulating our microbiome. It's so, how many examples can we think of over the past 10, 15 years that that's the case? It's really the microbiome's implication in how it's benefiting many other systems of the body, like our skin or our hair or our mood or our energy levels or our inflammation levels. It's so fascinating, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. And the transfer of bacteria for, you know, increasing longevity, young bacteria into older and the vice versa. So it's
let's very talk about that. I know people's ears are ringing right now. What goes on there? What about the transfer of bacteria that we should know about?
Yeah. So in one area of research that I think is very, very interesting, the general idea is what you're switching things from old and young. Mm-hmm. And just to summarize, a lot of work is, you know, a big component of is the actual ratio of bacteria in your microbiome. So if you do a fecal transplant, you can transplant a lot of, especially the sugar metabolism that's going on in a young person that, you know, they just very infrequently have problems with sugar metabolism. That's one of them. And then the other component that I'm also interested in is what are the things that are swimming around in your plasma that are aging you, and sort of a summary of that kind of world where you join the circulatory systems together of old and young mice is that surprisingly, it isn't that the factors from the young mouse are de-aging the old. It's that it's the dilution of factors that are keeping you old in the older mice. So all you have to do is dilute these factors that are keeping you locked into the aging program. And so that seems a lot more you're able to overcome that idea a lot better than, you know, if you think, oh, I'm just missing all these factors that are keeping me young. So things like, you know, when you're doing exercise and all these things that can dramatically change, you know, systems of your microbiome and system of your blood serum content, you know, it seems much more less of a hurdle than, you know, I damaged 40% of my genome and need to, you know, refold and get rid of all those proteins. So
absolutely. So, and we're talking about the second brain, the gut, right? 95% of serotonin's made there, 50% of dopamine's made there. And it's I think even resembles the brain, your intestines. So let's go from the second brain to the brain and the connection between sulforaphane and the induction of BDNF. Can we define BDNF and why we want to make sure we are supporting these pathways?
Yeah, and that, absolutely. And before we make that jump, I'd love for John to share some of his research on how sulforaphane really helps with the gut in terms of tight junctions.
With leaky gut syndrome. Yeah, that would be great. And we could, I'm sure, I don't know if data is out there now, but we know the connection between leaky gut syndrome and what they call leaky brain syndrome, you know, increased blood-brain barrier permeability, which zonulin really is implicated in both leaky gut and leaky brain. So it's a good segue between both. So what's going on there between BDNF and then also intestinal permeability would be great.
Yeah, so just to separate kind of big areas or fields of research, the one I think is really interesting to focus in on with sulforaphane. Sulforaphane activates a pathway called NRF2. And NRF2is you can, in the intestine, you can basically say it is the master regulator of tight junctions. And so when you induce that, you tighten the tight junctions and you're going to get less digested food material passing through the lining of the intestines and being introduced to your gut-associated lymphoid system, so which is the beginning of a lot of the trouble with your immune system.
Right,
so
triggering autoimmune issues and many different inflammatory problems.
Yeah, and the allergies and all that kind of
right.
stuff too. But what's unique to sulforaphane, I think I haven't seen in other supplements, is that it also repairs gap junctions. So that being a unique thing to sulforaphane, it was very interesting to me because I set up the test in order to measure these gap junctions. So it might be a new term for a lot of people, is when a tissue is acting like a tissue, they have these little pipes that go in between the cells, and they share the content of the cytoplasm with each other. So it actually is connected. So your cells in an organ are passing information between them, and they can act like an organ. They'll respond as an organ. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a really important feature of how you become cancerous, is you lose the connection to the tissue that you're around. And so that's the first step in metastasis also. But so making that tissue act like a tissue is a really big feature of sulforaphane, and it actually repairs damage to your intestines and repairs your gap junctions.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of the ways we looked at that, and John looked at that, was through putting glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, on cells. And so, and basically at that point with NRF2 specifically, he saw NRF2 drop 30%, I believe. Is that right? And, you know, if you think about it, NRF2 is responsible for phase two detox. You know, 30% drop is massive.
And so yeah,
this glyphosate is making, and NRF2 works in every cell of your body. So all of a sudden, every toxin that you're exposed to, once you have that glyphosate insult,
it's accumulating
that much more toxic, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't get it out. And so what John showed was basically, what with one dose of sulforaphane, you can get that NRF2 back
up
to normal. And that, wow, like he was saying, impacts, you know, your tight junction integrity.
Yeah. I have to say, on a clinical level, when I'm looking at labs, the amount of these pesticides, herbicides, Roundup, glyphosate, other environmental toxins, it is high in so many people, and they don't even know it. They think, you know, it's some abstract thing that they know is not good, you know, toxins, quote unquote, that they hear people in wellness talk about so much, but it's in people's systems. So to be supporting the NRF2 pathways and these other, you know, methylation pathways is essential for, I mean, these toxins trigger chronic diseases, autoimmune problems. And that's one of the reasons why we see such an epidemic rise of autoimmune conditions. So I just want to bring it home to people's real life. This is important for your life, your family's life. So it's improving intestinal permeability. It's healing leaky gut syndrome, for lack of better, or improving the intestinal lining integrity, maybe is a better way of putting it. What's it doing for the brain with BDNF? I'm fascinated about this. And maybe define BDNF if we can.
Sure. I would say the first thing is that, you know, we were talking about the connection to microbiome and sugar, and so many of those, you know, that combination of making butyrate and then also decreasing the amount of sugar is a scenario that is amenable to brain health in general. And so that switch of lowering sugar and increasing butyrate in general is inflammation in your brain. But besides that mechanism, is that sulforaphane itself is able to travel through the whole body. It doesn't have a problem with bioavailability, so it makes it to your brain directly. It's there. And so that's a really unique aspect of sulforaphane, because many supplements are not able to penetrate that blood-brain barrier. Mm-hmm. And so it's making it to your brain. And so the connection to BDNF is interesting, because BDNF in general, I would say that the big induction of it is butyrate, as well as fasting. So that's the AMP kinase system. And so induction of BDNF is just something that's known to be done through sulforaphane. And the reason that is so important is that brain-derived neurotrophic factor is a factor that is driving neuroplasticity. So your ability for your brain to accommodate change, like maybe a good way to think about that is somebody that was sighted and then loses their sight. That brain that you have used your whole life to develop the ability to see to process visual information. When that's lost, your brain will actually start using that brain area in order for hearing, for taste, for other uses. And that's why in people that are blind, they often have dramatically enhanced senses in other parts of their ability, their sensing ability. And so that would be neuroplasticity, a good example of neuroplasticity, even though you're an adult or you know, already finished developing. So neuroplasticity is something that we all want to be able to do, and is the reason why you want to keep stimulating your brain as you're aging. You know, introduce it to new subjects, make yourself machinate on chew on ideas for
masticate.
A while.
Masticate.
yeah, not
a again. I know, exactly. We're like, we're all not English majors. We're just saying things. We know what we're talking about. Just believe us.
You're able to make your brain be adaptable to current yes. time. So you want to be able to change.
Yeah. So, and one of our partners, Martin Katz, who helped bring the Sulfurivin product to the market too. He's an MD. He and his clinic, you know, we're talking about this. And he's like, I see so many people with memory loss, with memory issues, but then also, you know, we're post COVID or even within COVID-19, a lot of mood issues, right? Mm-hmm. And so that are brain related, that are sleep related too, and that the need for BDNF is huge. And a lot of people will email us and say, how do I know that broccoli is working and does the different things that you say it does? And so I'll often email them back and I'm like, how have you had any vivid dreams lately since you've started taking it? And it's not everybody, it's about a quarter of the people will email back and be like, oh my gosh, I've been wondering what that is. That's BDNF. And so that's the neuroplasticity element that John was talking about. That is at the BDNF really is at the center of brain health. And so with so many brain, you know, memory issues and mood issues around today, specifically, having something that induces BDNF is gold. It's a gold mine. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not saying don't fast. We're not saying don't exercise, which also induces BDNF. You should do those too. But this is yet another mm-hmm. tool as well.
Yeah, I love that. So it's your brain-derived neurotrophic factors, your body's ability to make new neurons. Like you said, neuroplasticity, people, you don't, the old science, the old idea that like basically once your brain is, like neurons are dead, there's nothing going back. Yeah. The new science is quite the opposite. Your body, your brain is able to regenerate, and this is a way to do that. And you touched on through the conversation, you know, different ways to support autophagy or support butyrate. And it goes, I'll pose the question to you, what are some other of your favorite ways to support longevity, like the top ones? I'm assuming it's fasting on the list, and maybe give us three other ways that are complementary to these pathways the Sulforaphane supports.
Don't take all the answers, John. Just three.
Well, just stick to three, John. Come on.
Start with the one. So a really fun topic for me is hormetic stress. So, you know, why is exercise so good for you? One of the things it does is induce these heat shock factors. And so similar to autophagy, there's another pathway that you can refold proteins, and that's through heat shock factors. And so they also refold proteins. And so that's pretty easy to see that when you're, you know, really extreme exercising, you're overheating and you're stimulating this heat shock response. Another one is sauna. So sauna, very similar to exercise. It's actually surprising how similar it is to exercise.
Yeah.
If you go in and, you know, measure your heart rate and measure your breathing and your temperature, that's actually a good measure of how long you should stay in the sauna. You know, stay in long enough that your heart rate starts going up. Stay in long enough until, you know, your actual core temperature rises. And so those are two that I think are really amenable even to people that may not be able to exercise mm-hmm. as thoroughly enough to raise your temperature. You can get started with sauna, and also sulforaphane induces HSP. So it's just one of those topics that I really think is one that anyone has access to. Of course, if you talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
To your doctor. The disclaimer.
Not the disclaimer. The yeah, right.
Yeah. So for me, I'd say, of course, you know, John took exercise. So of course, I mean, one of the ones that I think we both do is resveratrol. So that works with in the CERT area, and David Sinclair's research is very compelling. There's also some counter research, but which I don't think we agree with. I don't think. Anyway, but yeah, I'd say anti-aging resveratrol. Yeah, it's the molecule in red wine responsible for the French paradox. At least they think, they originally thought maybe there's research that shows maybe not, but where French people eat fatty foods but and drink lots of wine, but are still pretty healthy cardiovascularly. And then I'm just thinking, I mean, a lot of the things, you know, because we come from a cancer background with my wife's cancer. If we're kind of pushing against cancer, you are kind of by definition pushing again, you know, towards anti-aging. And so if you think about what stimulates your Krebs cycle, so I'll do PQQ, I'll do Bliquinol, so the reduced of CoQ10. Those are some ways. We have a berberine product that we like a lot. And so berberine is infamously poor at getting into your getting across your blood barrier. It's one of the fat solubles that's not bioavailable, and so we basically have a technology to get across the barrier. And so what that does is it can throw you into ketosis in 4 hours. Wow. If you're fasting. And so that's the whole idea of ketosis, and it is another favorite, but really fasting. And right now, like, I'm doing the Prolon fast, do a little ad. We don't sell it. We just buy it. Prolon.
Loyal customer. Yeah.
And so, basically it's the easy way to do a fast. You get the stem cell proliferation benefits with still having some calories. Two boys, and they will run me ragged if I don't have a few calories. And then you get the hangry, and I'm like, ah. And they're like, yell at me. Why did you yell at me? I'm hangry. So anyway, it helps with that. But I'd say, you know, really sleep. Sleep is so central to just rejuvenating yourself. And you know, it goes back to, I mean, last night I just got 4 hours of deep sleep. I took two broccolates and two of our berberites. And it's so great. Magnesium. It's so great for throwing you into deep sleep.
I love that. These are all really good tips. And you mentioned even earlier the sulforaphane being for somebody that's having difficulty getting into ketosis. Maybe they're experimenting with the ketogenic diet. They're wanting to support longevity, health span, or they have an inflammatory problem or a metabolic issue. They're trying to lose weight, whatever reason they're doing it. Many people have trouble getting in ketosis. So a lot of the things you just mentioned here, sulforaphane, the berberine, optimizing sleep, fasting, all of these things can really help enhance these not only pro longevity pathways, but these fat burning ketogenic pathways as well.
Yeah. And I would just say, you know, we've done a decent amount, just, you know, it's not easy, but if you stay the course, you know, and you get what's called keto adapted, so you can actually use your ketones, it's a game changer. So, and that can take weeks to months.
Yeah. Yeah.
But once you are, it's really, you know, you can cycle in and out. And then once you cycle, you know, cycle out of ketosis, eat carbs, you can cycle back in and still be able to burn those ketones.
Yeah, for sure. And that, I think from a long-term standpoint, that cyclical ketogenic diet is a great idea for most people to be supporting longevity and so many other things in the body. So let's talk about just day-to-day, how do we get sulforaphane in the diet? If we're going to start with food, how much broccoli sprouts are we downing? Like, how much should we be getting with our meals?
Yeah, maybe
some other foods too, not just broccoli sprouts.
It's a great question, Will, because, you know, the broccoli sprout is sort of the king, right? It's the one that people go to. It's a superfood. My boys grow microgreens. They grow lots of broccoli microgreens and sell them to people. People love them. We grew them in the sprout version for years, and we would juice about 2 to 3 ounces and throw some carrot in there, throw some ginger in there, throw some lemon in there. and have a really good juice that's palatable. Because if you're just doing a broccoli sprout shot, that's not sustainable. It's awful. You know, it tastes nasty. But if you throw some lemon in there, right, John? If you throw some lemon in there, all of a sudden that citrus cuts it. But 2 to 3 ounces, you know, and the thing is, there are two things. Like, we sell seeds because we know people, not everybody wants to buy a capsule, not everybody wants to spend the money to do that or can, but not all seeds are created equal. We actually bought 2019. We tested, we're looking for seeds, sources of organic broccoli seeds. And we're just finding some funny results with our test, internal testing. It's come to find out we had bought 7 brands of organic seed off Amazon. 6 of the 7 did not have the ability to make sulforaphane. She's like, dude, what's going on there? You know, and so we retested about 6 months later, 9 different brands. At that point, I think 8 of the 9 did produce sulforaphane, which is great. But it's just like, it all of a sudden raises this issue of like, well, what's going on? Like, why didn't, so we offer seeds that we know, we test, half a pound can make about 400 microgram or milligrams of sulforaphane. It's just given. And so people want to buy, we're fine with that. You know, we don't make a ton of money off of that, if any, but it's a service. And we say, hey, throw some radish in there too. Radish is a good source of that enzyme myrosinase. But I mean, really, if you think about it, have you grown microgreens before or sprouts?
No, I've bought them before, but I've never taken the leap yet.
It can get a little dicey, especially during the summer months. Where you get, you know, all of a sudden you'll have like a crop that you're counting on that has mold all through it. You have to toss it. And then like we were doing it, we had at the time 2 young children. And if you travel, you miss a crop, it's really difficult. And so having a capsule, sulforaphane in the capsule that you know you can trust is just, it's just, even if you're growing it, you may want to have that back as a backup.
Yeah, and if you're pretty gutsy, we sell the liquid also. So that's a lot more economical. You can mix it with papaya, mango juice covers it pretty well. And so you can experiment to see how you can make that palatable. But we had a lot of fun at conferences just putting the liquid out and having people taste it. Yeah, it's definitely.
We'll see how wellnessy are you by like your face whenever you take the shot.
Everybody, exactly. Yeah, level of toughness.
Yeah.
So how many servings we're getting it from our foods? How above and beyond the food, just to make sure we're getting the therapeutic dose throughout the day. I've been taking 2 capsules of broccoli every day. Is that enough? Should I be titrating it higher than that? What's the science show?
Yeah, so that was one of the tests that I developed, was how to actually measure NRF2 in a person. And so with just 2 pills, I measured the NRF2 induction in buccal cells. They're the cells that are lining your mouth. And so I got the equivalent of 5 micromole of pure sulforaphane when I took the cells and incubated them outside of the body. And so the same cells when I took 2 pills and measured it within the body was 5 micromole. And so the only thing to compare that to really is in humans is there's a fantastic study done by Johns Hopkins with ladies who were having breast reduction. So they take 4 ounces of broccoli sprouts, and then during the breast reduction, they measured the amount of sulforaphane that was in the breast tissue, and that was 2 micromole. And then in a paper that is associated with that, they showed that 2 micromole of sulforaphane could actually block development of breast cancer in an in vitro organoid-like system, so pretty close to in vivo. And so most of the studies, when they're looking at sulforaphane and broccoli sprouts, they're able to measure 2 micromole. We're able to get 5 micromole equivalents because we're not just stabilizing sulforaphane in broccoli. There's a bunch of isothiocyanates that are in there that are also stabilized. And then we add in our broccoli plus, we're also adding phenethyl isothiocyanate. So that's the one that's famous from watercress.
Got it.
Works synergistically with sulforaphane. So that's sort of our premier product, is that we're getting just from a dose that you take from the recommended dose from the bottle, you're actually getting therapeutic amounts of sulforaphane.
Perfect. Wow, that's great. I love the product so much. And as I'm always saying on the podcast, if someone's on the podcast as a guest, it's because I take it myself, I recommend it to patients, or both. And this is definitely a both for sure. So can we go back to some of the other foods maybe people can incorporate in their day? Mention, obviously, broccoli sprout is the highest content of sulforaphane. Watercress, I know you mentioned that. Thanks for highlighting that. Are there other, you mentioned radishes, any other super high nutrient dense foods here in this category of supporting these pathways?
What I'm famous for saying is don't stop eating your broccoli, because adult broccoli has compounds that are not in our pill. So DIM and I3C are two components that are much higher in adult broccoli. So they are shown in many different places to work synergistically with sulforaphane. So
okay.
Your adult broccoli also. And then our other famous ones that I think are we've shown synergy with. So parsley, chamomile tea. So we can get into the actual molecules of those, but turmeric is also shown to be synergistic with
curcumin.
And then berberine. And so that's kind of our, if you looked at our next 5 years, the supplements that we're putting out are ones that are synergistic with sulforaphane. And so I would say those are big ones for me is parsley. You can juice it or you can put it on food, you know, more than usual. Chamomile tea at night, that's apigenin. Big fans of apigenin.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are kind of big ones for me.
Love that. David, any other thoughts?
I mean, John covered quite a bit there. You know, nutrient density is something we talk a lot about. And John talks a lot about Bruce Ames with the micronutrient deficiency causing aging. And so, you know, raw, an egg, a farm-raised organic egg, beef liver, any organ meat is good for micronutrients. But I think, I mean, you know, just as some thoughts to kind of that I've had as we're talking is that, you know, we're in, and you see this probably, we're the first generation, I believe, is the research shows is that we may not live as long or longer than the previous generation. And that's like, you know, that's because toxic burden, toxins and impacting your brain, cells, you know, organs, all sorts of things, gut, the whole glyphosate burden, and that's insidious in everything. And so having tools to really push back against those toxins and also support, you know, anti-aging, it's super important.
Yeah, without a doubt. This has been a rich conversation. Before we go, you all know that the podcast is called The Art of Being Well. I want to pick your brains about a few other things that we call your art of being well. This is David and John's art of being well. I want to pick your brain about different things within wellness. The first question is, we talked about some bad tasting things right now, some shots of sulforaphane. But what is a healthy food that we haven't talked about so far that is the worst tasting healthy food that you still have it because it's just so, has so much exciting science around its health benefits?
I just said it the other day at lab meeting was like, I drink cod liver oil every morning.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer.
So I'm routine about that. I'm kind of dogmatic about it with my family. They literally hate me for it. And, but just as sort of a good readout of how things went is, both my girls are graduated now, but kindergarten through 12th grade, they only missed one day of school between kindergarten and graduating.
That's great. So tell people there's a great source of fat soluble vitamins, omegas. Like why should people be looking at cod liver oil?
Yeah, so the omega-3 fatty acid profile, you know, that combined with trying to reduce your omega-6 fatty acids is just the number one, two punch when I talk to anybody of trying to decrease inflammation. You know, that ratio has been been proven for eternity. I mean, cod liver oil was the first study ever done on humans to show increased longevity in 1930s. So,
wow, I didn't know that. Very cool. Is there any brand that you like specifically with cod liver oil? I know people have their favorites here.
Yeah, I've switched around all different brands and things, and I will often take one that I think is the most palatable, I think is Carlson's. Okay. And then I will actually put back some of the supplements that are supposed to be in there. So I'll add back to try and make a more universal fat-soluble system. So I'll add back gamma tocotrienols into it, and I'll add vitamin K2 back into it, and I'll add a little bit more vitamin A, and then I do put more vitamin D into that one. So that's kind of my go-to, is to fortify one that actually tastes really good.
I love it. You've biohacked cod liver oil. You just made your own. I love it. How about you, David?
Well, I was worried I wouldn't be able to beat John's nastiness as far as cod liver oil. But so one that I don't do every day. In fact, but it is definitely nastier to the taste than cod liver oil is liquid ketones.
Oh, for sure. I know what you're talking about. It is like a cleaning product, something you put in a car. But
we were doing that back in the 2015, way before the keto had taken off. But like, there was, at that point, there was the research that thought maybe that wasn't good, and so we stopped. But I think there's research that's showing that is actually better now, right, John?
Yeah, it lowers your blood sugar.
Yeah, and so that's. But I think this isn't as bad as cod liver oil, but it's still pretty bad. It's called the Budwig diet. So you take flaxseed oil and you blend it with cottage cheese, and so it makes the flaxseed oil bioavailable. So Joanna Budwig, who John introduced me to, who is a lady and from Germany in the 30s, who could have won the Nobel Prize had she not been a female potentially, and really helped a lot of cancer patients. So anyway, it increases your omega-3s.
Hands down, guys. I've asked a lot of people that question. You guys gave the best answers, but I wouldn't have expected anything less. It was so fresh and innovative. What's the weirdest wellness thing that you've done? And I think you both being science-minded people, it's relative, I know, weird, but you've probably done a lot of N-of-1 experiments here. So what's the weirdest thing you've done for your wellness that you're willing to admit on a podcast?
I would say what just jumps to mind was, after testing sulforaphane on cells, I became convinced that our version of sulforaphane was safe. And I couldn't say that for other versions that I was testing. And so to prove that, we all sat around the production facility and ate the equivalent of a brick of sulforaphane. So like the equivalent of maybe 100 pills.
More.
You were ODing, but not ODing on sulforaphane. That's funny. How did you feel? Did you start to levitate?
if you do that, you will always remember what your brain feels like with no inflammation.
Right. And wow,
it is very, very different. Like if someone has gotten into very deep ketosis, it's very similar to that. Like,
got it. Makes sense. Or
brighter than normal.
Yeah.
If you're not used to it, it would be just a little bit disturbing. But
how about you, David? weirdest wellness thing that you've done?
I'll just go for it. So basically, I'm in Cabo. It's 2 days
before, as all good stories begin. I'm in Cabo
2 days before Easter this past year, and to get out, I have to do a COVID test positive. And I'm just like, I have two boys at home. Like, I am not missing Easter at home with my boys. So I'm going to retest, but I have to like fix up my nose. So I lavage my nose really well with whatever I have. And then if you've heard of DMSO.
Oh yeah. Chelator. Yeah.
Yeah. And so don't do this, please, at home, because.
Not advised. Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. But I make a poultice of DMSO and broccoli, and I just like layer my nose with it. And just like, it's this thick. And so get retested. Sure enough, I don't have COVID. But then I realized this, like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just got a ton of sulforaphane straight into my blood system because this DMSO goes through the dermal layer. And so it's taking all this stuff. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. But I have not done it since. It was an emergency.
So. Hey, look, desperate times, desperate times.
Desperate measures, yeah.
That's amazing. So I forgot to ask you this earlier. We'll make it part of your art of being well. Let's just do it. But like, is there any science about premature graying of hair and sulforaphane maybe being a tool to stave that off or slow down that accelerated process? I'm assuming it's tied into these mechanisms. Or what's the science show so far?
I know a little bit about that mechanism, and it has to do with, I know about it from mice, and when they make their hair, it's pretty well studied. Like, how do you have a mouse hair that has, you know, four different colors? You know,
yeah.
A guti has multiple different colors. So as the hair is being made, there are accessory glands that are, you know, as it's growing, putting pigment into that hair as it's growing out of the hair follicle. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty well known that the way that hair is grayed is by hydrogen peroxide,
yeah, and catalase.
Excess hydrogen peroxide production. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if you wanted to try and hack that, I would. That's kind of how I would go about doing that. And, probably the best way to work in that area is that manganese superoxide dismutase is a molecule that is induced by sulforaphane. It's in the mitochondria. And it's what converts your hydroxy radical into hydrogen peroxide. And then from hydrogen peroxide, it's converted back to water with catalase. So I think if I were trying to get back at that system, I would say it's very likely in the mitochondria world, it's very likely hydrogen peroxide related. So combine things that would try to reduce the amount of hydrogen peroxide, increase catalase. I haven't specifically looked to try and do that. Or to that, I think sulforaphane would be a good molecule there. And I know lipoic acid is in that same pathway, does reduce hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah, and talking about hair, since we are talking about it, I mean, our two capsules, one capsule even, can deliver a clinically significant dose. And we have actually a whole bunch of testimonials of people who have been helped with balding. So not necessarily graying, but balding. And yeah. So there's a blocking of the DHT, and there's that you can go to PubMed and find that sulforaphane DHT. Interestingly, some of our first testimonials on that, I think our first three were from older women who absolutely love us because they were thinning and they're like, I have hair. And so it's, you know, it works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you're opening really and you're inducing these pathways that are just begging to be supported. And I have to say, like, as somebody that is intentional to bring sulforaphane into my life daily, I noticed since I've started that years ago, just such a difference in my skin and my hair. I mean, we're talking about these sort of deep, wonky, like science stuff, but it's just like, it could be as superficial as how you look, which isn't superficial at all. I mean, people are plagued by skin problems and hair problems, and this is something that's definitely to integrate into your life. My friends, thanks so much for taking the time and talking about all this stuff. Where can people go? How can they get broccoli? I mean, the berberine compound that you talked about, where do they go to get all these things?
So yeah, we have a Black Friday special going on right now. Go to Mara, MARA-Labs, LABS/ Will Cole. And there, we have a sale, a fantastic sale going on right now, best of the year. So you can get it there.
Love it. Thank you both. Thank you so much. Come back anytime.
Awesome. Well, Will, this has been a delight. So really, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, we really appreciate you helping us get the word out there, because it's weird to have a product that is as good as it is and just people not even know about it. So thank you so much.
They're going to know about it now. And these people that listen to the podcast are our kind of people. So they're going to love this. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, Will.
Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back every Monday and Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.
Note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.